Thank you to all of you for coming in and stepping up today. And in no particular order, I'm going to start on my far left. The DA's Emvuleni mayoral candidate, Mr. Kingsol Tshabalala, joins us with renewed vigor after this weekend's, after this past weekend's. I'm saying I hope you're joining us with renewed vigor and excitement for your party after this weekend.
Yes, I am. And thank you for having me.
Thank you for having us. And then closest to me, Mr. Yaku Mulder, not to be confused with another Mulder in the FF, but he is the provincial leader for the FF in Gauteng, in a chaotic, fractured, a voice for the minority-facing party, FF Plus. And the rose among the political thorns, Ms. Jule Khumane here, is a voter like you and I. And she is, like you and I, trying to figure out this political game. She's not a political commentator. She's a South African asking tough questions. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start. I'm going to start with the basics, right? And it's a question for all of you. Anybody can take it. And I'm thinking about Gauteng in particular. In your view, what actually is going on? What is breaking up? And I'll say Emfuleni, you know, I think the people in Emfuleni for many years now have lived with no water, water issues, have lived with sewage running in the streets, quite a decaying infrastructure. In your view, what does failure look like on the ground, in the people's lives, not reports, as we see it on the news?
I mean, it looks bleak in a sense that there is very little, actually there is zero in terms of service delivery. Because if you check the state of service delivery in Emfuleni, residents are subjected to floods or sewer in their streets. Roads are riddled with potholes. In instances, taps in other areas, taps have run dry. In other areas, they only receive water in a particular timing. Also, the residents have gone for years, some to up to 10 years without electricity. Basically, that municipality continues to leap from one disaster to another.
Sure. Not a great picture. Good. You know, Yaku, you have been in various spheres of government and over and have seen the cycle again and again. So in your view, is this decline new or is it simply that we're now seeing consequences of a build-up of many years of poor decision-making?
Yes, indeed. I believe that it's been a build-up and we see the result of it now, everything's collapsing. In most, lots of instances, it feels as if it's not possible to fix it. Let me give you an example, for instance. The flow of raw sewer, untreated sewer into our streets, into our scarce water resources, our streams, our underground water, in our local governments, especially in Gauteng, is something from another world. I've got the privilege to chair the Portfolio Committee for Agriculture and Environment in the province. And we've done some oversights. We've had all the municipalities before the committee, and we reached a stage where we realized that they are not in a position to fix it. And I take it that we will talk about the three spheres at a later stage, but what we also find is, in my previous term, I served in the National Assembly, on the Portfolio Committee for Trade and Industry and Competition. Local government is not able to support business, factories, roads, water. They're not supposed to, or they're not in a position to support the trade and industry, and that is having a negative impact on job creation as well.
Sure. And June, as a voter, when you look at all of this, what is it that comes top of mind when you think about how you place your cross in a local election as is coming up later this year?
Okay, so for me, in the beginning, when obviously I'm fairly young, So when sort of the involvement in politics, because I am a podcaster as well, initially it was just, it's a face, it's a personality. It's, you know, how they, what they say that kind of resonates. That's how initially it all starts for most people. But then as maturity begins to happen, it's first of all the values, because I do think now that ideology, values is so important, even in the research that I do for my YouTube show, because when you have the right values, you understand and you appreciate the tough, why the hard stuff is so important. And I think in our politics, people just don't have love for the tough part, because the tough part is what ensures that you maintain every single day. I always use the analogy of your home. If you don't sweep your home Monday to Sunday, by the time Sunday comes, if you don't do that in the whole week, you're not going to want to live there. But why, even when they talk about just the basics of life, they say make your bed in the morning, have your teeth brushed. So that also has to do with the ethos. It has to do with your value system. So I do think that when, as a voter, when I listen to someone, I don't want popular. I don't want things that are going to sound just good to make me feel better. I want to be able to really get in touch with what is this person's value system. And unfortunately, things around Christianity, family, all of these points that do kind of get thrown around in the narrative do have a weight. It's not that I want a specific person or certain personality to exclude other people or any of that, but I'm trying to build a picture in my mind that I need someone who understands the values, the right values. The right values replicate in understanding the basics, understanding the basics of every single day, making the hard decisions, even if you're not getting an applause, even if you're not making a decision that's going to get you a lot of likes. That does speak to principle. It does speak to values. And I think that's where I am at this point in my political sort of understanding. Yeah.
Sure. And I think all of us agree, just hearing these answers, that this isn't isolated cases. It seems to be systemic, seems to be across the board. And I'm wondering if we zoom out a little bit and think about Gauteng and the as a bellwether for what the country looks like. And it is the most populous province. It is the engine of our economy. You were talking to Milda a little bit earlier. And I'm clear that since the last national election, we're looking at coalition governments. Nobody is going to win an outright anything. No one. So what does that mean? What does that mean when you're in the room, when you're in the council chamber? How does a party like the DA or the FF then use its minority voice to ensure that change can happen? Or is it just going to be politics as usual?
Yes, I think, as you've mentioned, no political party will most probably win outright majority in perhaps maybe in Midvaal and Gauteng, but not necessarily. You know, the Freedom Front Plus and the DA has been in coalition together in numerous councils, which I take it was successful. There's definitely a voice. There's definitely a voice. You know, the electorate made two mistakes in the history of South Africa. They voted one party. Maybe I should mention the name. We all remember the National Party. They made it big. Give them that mandate. There was no real opposition to it. And look what they did. Then they did this once again with another party, namely the ANC. There was no checks and balances. And in a coalition, there are actually checks and balances. Coalition partners talk to each other. They, what they call in Afrikaans, armbrug, there's some leverage before they get to a solution. But it should be a responsible coalition. You know, there's a saying that goes like this. That they say it's only politicians and cats that can flirt and fight with each other at the same time. So, although you differ, and you present different or various electorate where you work together towards a common goal. And she mentioned values, which is the constitution, which is service delivery against corruption, etc., etc. If we can find one another, the coalition partners, on that principles, then a coalition would work very well.
Okay, so the DA has been in governance structures across many municipalities, and in some municipalities in the Gauteng province outright having the seat. How do you think that the DA is going to be able, going forward, to scale what they see as service delivery and make it available at scale across the province? Can they do that, or is it just a promise?
No, it is not just a promise. We can do that if you factor into consideration what the DA here in Gauteng has been able to achieve in Midval. I mean, if you look at Midval, services are rendered on continuous and sustained basis as mandated by the Constitution. You also look in terms of clean governance in relation to about 13 consecutive clean audit, lowest unemployment rate, the number of investment that is Midval, that Midval has been able to attract. And also you look at, maybe you contrast that with what is happening in Mfuleni, because they are neighboring municipalities. You look in terms of infrastructural development, you look in terms of the delivery of services in general, because in Midval, refuse is collected.
But that's in Midval, the DA has the mayor.
Yes.
I'm asking about how in a minority space, because as we agree that it's going to be a coalition of some sort, how do you think that minority voice, because in Mfuleni, the DA has been there, he's been there,
yes,
and yet have not been able to move delivery in that way. So how then, going forward, do you think you can scale that if you haven't been able to up to now?
If you look at the government of national unity and also what the DA has been able to achieve in the government of national unity, I think that is the best indicator to show that if we are given an opportunity to participate in coalition governments locally, we would be able to positively contribute and ensure that we fight against the scourge of corruption. We fight to ensure that our people regularly get services, and that our infrastructure, those issues are addressed. I'll make an example. Before you do that,
June wanted to say something, but I want you to answer this question, because this is my question. The DA, you are saying in the government of national unity, you have been given an opportunity to participate. And I'm saying the DA has got councillors across municipalities. The DA has had a room, has had a seat at the table. And this minority voice has not been able to shift anything. You think the national politics is going to filter down? Is that your answer? Yes, it will filter down.
Let me maybe simply answer your question. You know, sometimes when you participate in local government, remember, even if you can come up with the best solutions, to say in terms of moving forward, this is what we're proposing as the Democratic Alliance. But in the end, political parties that hold the majority will always subject decisions to a vote. I think that is where we are losing the battle, because even if you come up with the best possible solution, they will always subject this to a vote. Because of the numbers that we are having, when it comes to a vote, they are always defeating us. I'll make an example. We've submitted a number of motion of no confidence against the mayor of Mfuleni, and against the mayor of Sidibe District Municipality, to say these mayors are not prioritizing their communities. Their priorities are skewed. But when it came to a vote, our motions were defeated on the basis of a vote. But that does not mean we have not been fighting. We have been exposing in terms of what is happening. If you check in media, you can see that we have exposed a number of things. Recently, I think the number of issues that we've exposed, where Mfuleni employees claimed an overtime to the value of 700 million. But we say employees are claiming millions in overtime, but the state of service delivery in Mfuleni is deteriorating. So I'm trying to show an example to say there's so much that we are doing in terms of playing an oversight. We've reported a number of cases to a Human Rights Commission, Public Protector. We've engaged.
So you're moving. You yes. believe that you're moving, and you believe that the GNU is going to give you more muscle.
Yes, and also
okay,
if you
so
check,
let's hear.
Maybe lastly, just to close. Also, you check how we are growing in terms of the vote that we are getting. I think people in Mfuleni are also starting to appreciate the role that we are playing.
Okay, good to hear. June, you had a burning comment.
She was sort of, yeah. I've thought about this, and I think at a ministerial level, when it comes to local municipalities, it's not a coalition. There's one minister of COPTA. And I think that as voters, we do need to kind of look at what's the mandate coming from COPTA that essentially is aiding what happens at council level. Because now there's a threshold conversation about setting up thresholds that if you do not get X amount of support in your local municipality, you cannot have a say at a council level. Because right now it's almost like, yes, it's adults in the room, but then adults cannot be left alone, right? It's exhausting. It's not good for the discourse. It's confusing. It's a blame game. And I think it's, 2-3 years now since this coalition thing has been so... it's just basically an itch that really voters are eager to say, let's just wrap it up. I'm not for centralization, but I think the one minister that's given the COPTA portfolio needs to give voters confidence that the system is set in terms of who is in council, what should be there, what should they have, because it should not just be anyone. The fact that now there's a problem with service delivery, and then now I'm told as a voter that we've got grade 12 people in there. Why were they in the first place? What systems are in place to get someone to have a decision in a municipality? So at a ministerial level, it's not a coalition. So I do think that these things are also quite important because that portfolio is critical. The portfolio now that's held by Vinny Gosin is important. I know we always look at finance and all these other things, but that too now becomes where the overseer of all of this mess sits. And if he's dragging his feet on the issue of thresholds, which is what I've judged that he's dragging his feet, he's not coming to a decision. The question is why.
So what you're raising is you're also raising the blurred lines of accountability, right? Where accountability actually sits and who is in control and in charge, even as there are adults in the room. So my question then, I'll start with you, Yaku, is in this environment then, what does success look like for your party? If your party is doing the work that you say you want to do, what would success look like for a voter?
And in the first instance, in some of the councils, we would be in opposition, as you mentioned earlier. Then you should be a strong opposition, but also a constructive opposition, not only criticizing, coming forth with solutions, win-win solutions, very important. And I'm quite confident that we have achieved that. It's not always possible. And in other instances, there would be a coalition. You have to have a steady coalition. There have to be confidence in your coalition partners. But the main thing is the coalition parties or partners should have common values. And the values that I've been talking towards is the Constitution of South Africa, like I said, no corruption, anti-corruption, accountability. And if I could just add something else, which also speaks to the previous topic, that we should take notice of this. We are sitting in a unitary state with a constitution that's been designed to have lots of power up there, national level.
Which is what June is talking
yes,
about.
Yes, yes. There should be more powers, there must be more devolution of powers towards local governments, towards communities, but with the necessary accountability. Now, if you look at Chapter 3 of the Constitution, it clearly states how corporations should work. But there's no mention of what the accountability and how is it going to be enforced if it's not adhered to. That's a flaw. And then right in the beginning, I mentioned that we had the municipalities appeared before the portfolio committee, and we realized that, for instance, local government pollution are polluting waters or the water. They're not in a position to fix it. The province tells us that they got limited powers, limited budget. And the national department tells me they can't intervene. Now what now?
So budget, money. We haven't spoken about this. And it's an uncomfortable conversation. You know, province like Gauteng, where we have got growing informal settlements, we've got a high number of unemployed people or people outside of the system. And quite honestly, the way that municipalities run is not just money coming from treasury, it is also what they can collect from their constituents. It's what they can collect. Revenue collection is a big deal. So here where we sit today, what for your parties, and I'll come to you, June, just talking about the voter and their role in this. But for your parties, what is your realistic plan for increasing revenue collection in this constrained environment? And more importantly, how do you decide who gets what level of delivery and when? Is it going to be the richest who pay, get the services first? What's the plan?
I think when you come to delivery of services, you cannot say the rich must come first. I think delivery of services should be done equally across the board. It should not matter whether you are rich or poor. And also remember, it makes provision also for those who cannot afford to pay for rates and taxes. I did late indigent to say me, a person who earns so much cannot pay. If you are unemployed, you cannot pay. If you are a pensioner, you cannot be expected to pay rates. But equally, you need to ensure that they also get services. But how do you increase revenue collection? I think it also depends on quality of services that you are rendering to the residents. I'll make an example. Say you continuously pay your rates and taxes, yet you are not getting the services that you are expecting from the municipality. So it means you will also be hesitant when it comes to paying your rates and taxes. I think also municipalities, in terms of collection, there should be a system that is put in place to monitor, especially people who are stealing electricity from the municipality, who are stealing water. Because the moment you're able to steal electricity without any consequences, so it means you won't see a need for you to pay those rates and taxes. I think we can ensure that those who are paying continuously pay, but we need to deliver service. I'm making an example.
What's the plan to increase revenue collection in your view?
One, as I indicated, that is the delivery of services. That is the indicator that should be done. I mean, you deliver quality services, people will automatically pay for their rates and taxes, and also monitor those who are stealing from the municipality in relation to electricity and water. And also fix the issue of billing. Because it cannot be that this month your bill comes, it's about 7K, then the following month your bill is 32,000. So that tends to discourage residents from paying. And you can remember, whilst they are still fighting or you have lodged a dispute, so it means you'll not be paying for your rates and taxes. I'll make an example with, say, a resident from Mfuleni, because the municipality did not collect refuse between February and March. No refuse was collected. So now you want to tell me that a person who's not receiving or has not had this refuse collected for 2 months would voluntarily go and pay for rates and taxes? I think the delivery of quality services...
Yaku, what's the FF slang?
You see, it's not always poor people who don't pay, and rich people often... sometimes they don't pay either. But the problem is with the culture of non-payment for service delivery, there should be consequences. South Africa became a country of no consequences. Because the law is not enforced.
So that's the first thing.
Second thing is... We have to take into account that approximately 34 to 37% of local government's income is generated by selling of electricity. And we see what happened with ESCO, what it did to our economy. So the need for electricity is less than it was. And that will also have a negative influence on the income possibility of a local government. We also need to look at the funding model of local government. We mentioned earlier that more power should be given to local government, as well as far as budget's concerned, but with the necessary accountability. And the funding models are old. They're not necessarily applicable anymore because we've got urbanization. We've got the expansion of informal settlements. There's all sorts of factors that needs to be addressed, which has not been done. So the funding model is one. And then the other one is, of course, and I want to echo that, my friend in the DA, is that high service, excellence of service delivery would make people pay more. It will all contribute towards economic growth, which will cause that people earn more money and they will be able to pay more. So it's not a single aspect. The one influences the...
It's a blended model.
Yes, it's a blended model.
You know, June, I'm so glad that you're here joining us and have the dance from the perspective of a voter. Because in Nufi, what is the missing gap between people who can pay but don't pay? And how do you think that parties like the DA and the FF can engage residents to be more responsible around? We often talk about their rights, but not so much about their responsibility. What do you think that gap looks like, and how can that gap be closed?
Yeah, and I think it's right there, right? It's that in any other aspect, like let's say private sector, you don't take what you don't pay for, right? Even if someone's not looking, if you take it without paying for it, it's a conscious thing. You're stealing, and we all have a broad understanding of that. So it does come with the fact that in politics, it's obviously a people function, but we cannot remove the fact that, yes, it's a people function, but we are still delivering an end product of sorts. So again, to the point of what's popular, what the narrative, the quality of the narrative, right, at this point is that, for example, I often hear the word deserve. I deserve a lot of things as I'm sitting here now, but I can't just get what I deserve. So there is a lot of that in terms of what goes ahead of a plan, what goes ahead of a proper funding strategy, what goes ahead of a plan is a promise, because it's, again, you want to get support and so and all of these things. So it's also people understanding that just in as much as when you go to a shop, you pay for what you get, it's a similar view here. And we also need to take the voter in the process of understanding why it's important that people should pay. Because if you take, remember approaches that happened in Tembisa, where the residents were furious, and rightfully so, because up until a certain time, they were paying an X amount for electricity, I believe. And then suddenly, I think it was a day mayor for Mekuruleni, was introducing a different now payment of fee. And it angered people because all along, no one had given them a full understanding of why you should pay for what you use. So the moment that you try to change, especially for parties like FF and DA, they become immediately unpopular. Because for the voter, if you don't believe that I should, then I'm not motivated. I'm not motivated. So I do think that it starts with responsible messaging. It starts with the quality of the narrative, which I think is very problematic. Because in every other aspect, it's not even a question. You do not take what you don't pay for. Whether or not you have a lot, you have little. And of course, I do get how sort of public goods came to be a thing, why tax, for example, came to exist. Whereby those who earn a certain amount get a portion. Yes, but we're abusing that opportunity. It's an opportunity to be able to go into my salary every month and take a portion of what I could be using for my own personal use. People are abusing it, because what goes ahead of all of these things is a promise. It's a picture. It's a vision. It's what some people call a euphoria of, oh yeah, well, I should be able to just get water by paying for it. So somewhere, somehow, we need to take a step back and take voters along the process. And I think if you pay for what you use, you have more appreciation, and there'll probably be less abuse from how the voters tend to treat infrastructure and all of these things. But the quality of the narrative is truly problematic in my view.
Sure. So I want to open up to the floor. Can I give you 2 seconds to think about some questions? Because I do have one more question. You know, we've spoken a lot about how infrastructure needs funding, how the infrastructure is decaying, and some of the decisions that have brought us there. But another part of the revenue perspective that we haven't spoken about is about the leakage, the revenue leakage. So even where the money has been collected, the money is there, it is misused, misappropriated. And this is definitely something that also angers, I think, a lot of people and creates this gap for people who can pay too, not wanting to pay, right? But I also want to know how important it is in your view to ensure that these budgets that are allocated properly, but also that municipalities are actually able to protect and recover revenue, including addressing illegal economic activity that undermines this tax base. How important is that? And do you believe that politicians have been honest with the voters with regard to how they do that, protecting this small as it may be tax base?
Yeah, it's very important. You know, there are various oversight bodies, not only the portfolio committees in local government, provincial and national level, but also institutions like the Auditor General, for instance, SALGA, et cetera, et cetera. And all of them are agreement about one thing is, for some reason, critical positions are not being filled. We're sitting with vacancy rates in local government of critical positions. They're not able to spend the money. They often forfeit budget and have to repay it to the province or to the national fiscus, which is one thing. And it's because, now one can ask, why is the positions not filled? Is it because of lack of expertise or what it is? That's one thing. So we need skills. Skills development, skilled people appointed in the right positions. Second thing is, unfortunately, corruption is synonym with South Africa, synonym with the local government. It's not me only that's saying that. It's Auditor General, once again, SALGA, oversight bodies. Corruption should be eradicated. But it's not being done because there's not consequences. And then thirdly, of course, money's been shifted, moved between budgets. Money that's been ring-fenced for service delivery is being utilized for salaries for some reason. I think we've got too many employees. So one have to look at that for stocks, definitely.
And the mismatch of skills.
Yes, mismatch of skills.
In your view?
I think protecting our budget or protecting our financial resources, I think that is the best step in terms of getting municipalities that are working. I'll make an example. Okay, please excuse me. I always make reference to Mfuleni because I come from Mfuleni. Recently, Remota attached the bank account of Mfuleni because the municipality owes Remota about 1.8 billion. But you move 4 financial years back, Mfuleni has lost water to the value of 4 billion. So it means if Mfuleni was maintaining their water infrastructure, replacing the AG water infrastructure, so it means Mfuleni will actually be owing Rain Water basically zero, and then will also have surplus in terms of that water that was lost. I think also in terms of constant monitoring and valuation in terms of key infrastructure projects or projects that are happening in the municipality. In Sebuke, the Gauteng Department of Transport, the Bank of the Municipality, they in a building Sebuke in DLTC. After spending 19 years there, that project was abandoned and then it was vandalized. So now they're rebuilding that facility to the tune of 247 million. So in essence, it means it's 19 million down the drain. And also, I think the issue of nepotism and also killer deployment, because that's where you sometimes employ wrong people who don't have the know-how in terms of governance. I feel in South Africa, we have so much talent and people who can make a difference in our communities and our municipalities. But they're not given that opportunity because they are not close to those who wield political power. They don't hold the correct membership of a political party. I think once we do that, we would be able to for them. Also, our intergovernmental relations are not effective because if you check, they have turned into talk shops. They need implementing because national treasury always gives municipality the municipal infrastructure grant to say deal with issues of infrastructure in new areas, but our infrastructure is actually regressing. The implementation is actually regressing as opposed to progressing. I think that also the number one thing is for the administrative and political leadership of the municipality to guard the financial base of municipality against any abuse or misuse.
Okay. There is a microphone over here. We can hear you clearly.
Yes, I can. Am I audible?
You are perfectly audible.
My name is Samuel Chauke.
Currently a student from Wits University. And as the panel is speaking, there's quite a few issues that I found to be very problemsome. And the first one comes with the gentleman from FF Plus speaking about the checks and balances, right? To say that the National Party didn't have checks and balances and that's why it became so evil against black people, and that the ANC government did not have checks and balances, and that's why we have a country that we have today, which has failed in 30 years to bring towards the full democratic goal. And I'm bothered by that, because the way our constitution and our country is set up, there are levels of accountability that are there from the executive, the legislature, and the judiciary that are supposed to be doing the checks and balances. So I think that idea of the National Party and the ANC being the sole or majority voted for parties has created an idea that we cannot go back to a South Africa where there's one party that is leading. And every party that goes and says they're going to contest for elections has the idea in the back of their mind that they want to be the outright winners, right? And I think there's a lot of hiding behind now the coalition governments, either in municipalities or in nationally, to say, we can't do this because the DA is fighting us, we can't do this because the ANC is fighting us, we can't do this because the FF Plus is fighting us. And it creates a lot of excuses for the voter, more than it creates a situation where we can see what the parties can do. Because the DA, for example, has a ministerial position in the national government of unity, and the FF Plus still has that. So if they themselves cannot show through those particular portfolios that they have what they can bring when they have majority and hide behind the idea of coalition and continue to say motions of no confidence and this and this, it's time wasted for the voter. It's 5 years that is going to be wasted in the local government elections. So I think the political party idea must come back to that self-trust, to say the FF Plus is going to contest, the DA is going to contest, the ANC is going to contest, the EFF is going to contest, and we are all contesting for outright victory. And stop making it seem like it's God put in stone the idea that there's going to be coalition governments. We don't know what's going to happen. So that's one. And then
no, I'm going to stop you at that. I'm going to stop you at that.
We hear
no.
Yes.
We're going to move on to somebody else, and if there's time, we will come back to you.
Sure, thank you.
The gentleman next to you has you can move the mic to the gentleman next to you.
I think he said 30 seconds. No, if we want people to pay for services, let's create jobs for them. That's for their voter system.
Perfect.
Let's create
votes so that they can pay. We will come back to you. But let's be democratic. Let other people have that opportunity.
Yes, I did my 30 seconds. So my name is Mike Magwera. I work for a non-profit organization called Plan Act. We plan and we act. I'm disillusioned about politics. You have to convince me that I shouldn't. The mayor, the head of infrastructure, the HOD, the staff of the department responsible for roads and all those things, they drive like I do. I zigzag. And I ask myself, what do they do, these guys, every day? Honestly speaking, the MMC for roads and infrastructure, what do they do every day? The mayor, they zigzag like I do. But that's the first point. The second point is that, well, we have seen that it's doable. G20 showed us that you can clean, you can things keep things right. Now, why did we fall back? My other point is that as we increase the revenue collection, we must equally increase the maintenance budget. Okay, we are failing to even put aside 8% for maintenance. When you look at the budget of every municipality, none of them come close to 8%. And I'm pushing for 15% maintenance budget. Must be increased. And so we are busy reducing the maintenance, and that's why we find ourselves in this problem.
So at that third point, I'm going to ask you to move on to the next person. Because those were points and not necessarily a question. Do you want to respond to one of those things before?
No, I actually wanted to get my phone so that I can take notes, so that when I...
So you can take notes?
Yes, no, so that I can note questions I correct in order to respond. Thank you.
Okay. But you can... Do you want to respond to any of the stuff that's been spoken about yet?
I think I'll respond when giving an opportunity to...
I'm giving you the opportunity. Take it.
Okay, no, thank you. All right, no, thank you. I think starting with the coalition government, I think as a G, we are not contesting for coalition governments. We are contesting for outright majority, so that in case we don't deliver services, we will carry the sole responsibility. We would not want to apportion it to anyone or apportion it to our coalition partners. But in relation to coalition partners, my thinking is that South Africa are saying, you know what? We have given this political party to manage or to govern South Africa. They have failed. So let's try coalitions. I think even this phase coalition will also pass, given how political parties are going to perform within coalition. And also, in relation to our cabinet ministers, if you check, we always communicate our successes to say this is what we've been able to achieve. And equally, we are also playing an oversight role in other departments where we don't have a government minister. And also maybe to come to the second gentleman, this is a disillusioned vote. I think there's this, I might be wrong, it's my analysis. There's this psych about South African voters to say if one political party has failed, they now use the blanket approach to say all political parties are the same. All political parties are not the same. As much as Kaizer Chiefs and Orlando Pirates are not the same. I think they should judge each political party in terms of how they perform. Or they should not say if this one is bad, so it means all political parties are bad. I mean, I fully agree with him to say the state of our infrastructure is very bad. And then when he tried, some of our leaders senior officials, I think some of them do not have conscience, as he was saying, to say how as a mayor or as a senior official that is responsible for infrastructure, you're driving in a road that is bad, yet you're not doing anything to ensure that it's fixed, or you're aware of an area that is struggling with what. I think we should treat voting as employing people. I'm saying if you employ someone to come into your garden, he gets there, he cuts all your flowers, eats your garden. Yeah. I think the moment he does that, you're going to
fire. Yeah.
But the problem with South African voters, I think some of the political parties know that the best ammunition that they have against South African voters is that the South African voters tolerate too much nonsense state.
So I'm going to use your disillusionment as a roundup when we close. So think about that for a second. Sissy, you're going to have the last question, and then I'm going to one round of closing remarks.
Thank you so much. I am Chelsea Nachamba. I'm also from Plan Act. Our work is centered around the communities such as informal settlements and undeserved communities who bear the brunt of this broken basis that we are about today. And my question is, to the political representatives, how will you ensure that there's transparency in municipal systems and accountability in service delivery, bearing in mind that there's this irrational killing of accountants and auditors in municipalities is not isolated only in Emfuleni. We see it all around. So how will you ensure transparency and accountability, especially in municipal systems and in service delivery, practically? Thank you.
Thank you. So let's start with you, closest to me.
Thank you. Before I answer that question directly, I often wondered why our politicians don't answer questions. So I will answer it, but I must say the following. And it speaks to all three, the two gentlemen and the lady in the asking the questions. One thing that I believe, and our party believes it as well, that South Africa should relook the state of our moral compass. We actually need a reset of that. Each and every South African should ask himself if they're doing the right thing, everything that they could do. Because crime became the new normal in South Africa. And it's not acceptable. And one can argue, now, why did it happen? It's no consequences. Is it because of this? Is it because of that? But it's a normal thing. That's one aspect. The other aspect is that we should also think about our constitution. It's 30 years old, 1996. Is the constitution suitable? Is it still applicable? Is the dispensation working? Do we need another dispensation? We should also measure that, because remember what I previously said is the funding model for municipalities, for instance, were developed for a certain idea, which didn't roll out. Everything changed, but it's not been adapted. And I can totally understand how do we help people accountable then? There are rules, of course. We should eradicate corruption. That's a huge difference. Because one of the biggest reasons why we can't hold people accountable is because of our corrupt society, and especially in the public service. And then as far as the dissolution's vote is concerned, I can totally understand that. But unfortunately, politics visit you at your home if you're interested in not everything. It's been decided in the councils and in the chambers of South Africa. And as far as coalitions is concerned, of course, an outright majority would be better, but one has to be realistic. South Africa is not a homogeneous country. And I'm not only talking about culture and linguistic and religious groups. We are a community of communities. So the proportional and ward council, the hybrid voting system, served us excellent so that everybody could be represented. And for that said, I'm very realistic to say coalitions is a new thing in South Africa. Our constitution is actually not suitable for that. But we have to develop it into a future. Thank you.
Okay. I think
how to ensure transparency.
Sorry, but I think Mid Valley has shown. Why do I say Mid Valley has shown that where the DA governs, there's accountability and transparency? I mean, you should see the comments by the Office of AG after the audit of their financial, when they released their audit opinions. And also how the Premier of Conte, even when he was the Parallel State of the Province address in February, to say how the mayors look at what the Mid Valley is doing. And also in terms of awards that are given to the municipality by government institutions and other private institutions. And also I think in terms of ensuring that there is consequence management, because you'll find the instances there are public officials, senior, were suspended for like maybe around 2 years. They continue to draw their salary. I think, and also where we see acts of corruption, we need to act decisively without any fear of favor. The reason we want a politician completely removed from the recruitment and selection is to ensure that you won't be able to implement consequence management, because if we are friends, comrades, and family members, it becomes difficult to beat against you.
particularly the person that has been employed to do a particular job, if he's failing, there needs to be consequences. I think consequence management, that is where we're lacking. You'd find that most people are protecting each other. They are sweeping standards under the carpet. And make an example. But recently, I think you might have seen the Mfuleni procurement fleet scandal, where Mfuleni purchased trucks and buggies from the service providers to a tune of 16.9 million. Officials within the municipality signed to see those trucks and buggies were delivered, yet they were not delivered. That thing happened in 2022. Now that we got to know about it. The very same official who said he's now trying to blame someone who has resigned from the municipality to say he was forced. He's still at work. He's not suspended. The municipality did not open even a criminal case against him.
So consequence management would be your answer. You responded to how a disillusioned voter should reconsider themselves. And I think I heard a little bit around how you think the disillusionment should be dealt with. Fire the incumbent if they're not delivering. So, June, I will let you have the last word. As a voter and as a person who is going to be standing in the ballot box later this year, choosing a local government representative, what is the one thing that would persuade you to put your ex next to a particular party if you heard them say it going into LGE?
I think a much more answer that's closer to my heart when we talk about how voters decide is that I think there's a lot of work that the South African voter needs to do, a lot of work and internal work, right? Because I often say that you can never make a rational decision when you're angry. Like, if you are angry, I would suggest that you calm down first before you make a decision. It will never be rational. The country of Argentina, I think, is a great example to look at it, because the only time that the country of Argentina took a different direction in terms of how they vote, the fiscus completely was cleaned out to a point that they could not pay public service workers. And that's what drove people to take a stop and say, wait, all these social services, the free buses, the free electricity, the free water, that was actually taking away. Because I like the saying that invest today to secure tomorrow. That's when it landed, that all of the stuff that we were enjoying, the stuff that kind of, you know, creates this utopian feeling, was actually taking away at a future of Argentina one day. And then obviously we all know what happened, elections, and then a rock star character, you know, kind of got into that position. It's a very important lesson that we need to do the inner work as South African voters. Nothing good comes from any anger. I don't care who is fueling the anger. They can come from either side. If it's making you angry, if it's making you pissed off, you have to take a step and stop, because that's where a lot of voters in South Africa are kept occupied on getting people angry. You will never make a rational decision. And I think it speaks to also the maturity that's necessary, the maturity that's also needed. Because I have to give it to some members of our government, the public officials who make the decision to enter office, right? It's not an easy thing. These guys here, they away from home, we have to give it to them. Meaning the systems are there. The people that want to serve South Africa are there. But if you do not understand that your decision at the ballot equals what you get as the end product as a voter, these guys, there are so many wonderful people in our public service who are educated, who represent diversity, if that's what someone says, that's what I want. You find it in our parliament. But if you do not go, if you don't make the choice to understanding that your political choice equals what you get at the end of the day, you don't just choose on a ballot and then tomorrow everything works itself out. I always say people that urge voters to vote on race, it's almost assuming that the water will fix itself, that the electricity will generate itself into your home. No, these things are interconnected. We make the choice, we get the end product. We have people who are willing, who are sacrificing every single day to serve South Africa. We need to favor those people over guys that want to keep us angry and keep us all charged. No one can change what happened in history. Not a single person can rewrite what happened, as awful as it is. There isn't. No one has that power. So that would be my part, too short.
Sure. I think that's a beautiful place to end.